Welcome to Community Responsibility versus the Tragedy of the Commons, Volume 1. Today I am very blessed to have Nancy White here with me. Hi, Nancy.
Hey, Dave.
And what we're going to try to do is set out the groundwork for really what we're talking about in terms of community and what's going on out there in community worlds. I was really, really hoping to get Nancy to do this as the first one, because Nancy's really the person who gave me a lot of the language to get me started. We first met face to face in November of 2006, and had sort of met online before that. And she's really the place where I found a lot of the language to get started on the work that I'm doing, and I have a lot of respect for her work. And it's just really nice to have you here. Thanks for coming.
Well, thanks, Dave. Now I've got to live up to that expectation.
You do. I wanted to build that up for you.
Yeah, so you better ask really good questions.
Okay, I'll start with the really annoying question. What does community mean to you?
Community means a group of people who care about something and want to interact around that something over time. And I distinguish community from other kind of transitory forms with that, you know, a group of people who know each other. So in some sense, at least we know who's in and who's out. And yes, there is an in and out, although that boundary may be very fuzzy. And that it's not just a transitory one-shot gathering. I think the term community is used in so many ways online, including for like one-shot interactions with a customer service person or, you know, people just zooming in and out to gather information. And for me, that doesn't quite hit the community checkbox.
Do the people in the community have to care about each other, or at least some of the people in that community, in your mind?
Ooh, care is an interesting word. I think they have to be as concerned about we as they are about me to engage productively over time, but there's certainly a lot of communities where people don't care about each other, but they do engage over time, but maybe it's not productively.
Yeah, because, I mean, every community is going to have their drunken uncle. I mean, they're going to be people that get along and don't get along. But one of the things I always think about as the difference between what, say, George Siemens would call a network, that sort of separate nodes that work together and you end up helping yourself by being a node in the network. To me, the distinction there between that and a community is some personal, almost emotional investment. Do you think that's pushing that too far?
Well, I'd say relationship. And relationship can be very formal and impersonal, or it could be very deep and caring and have lots of deep emotional roots. I think it depends on the context of the community. If we look at, you know, the top 20 communities you can think about in your life, you're going to see different qualities of relationship. You know, people have relationships with their grocer because they go there every week. They have a relationship with the people they go to do meditation with. I mean, it's all different. So I don't think we need to worry about some sort of gold standard about what type of relationship, but the fact that there is some relationship. And one of the distinctions that shows up for me in my experience of networks and communities is that in networks, the connection is often around information, the information that we are located in the same city, or we care about the same tag on Delicious, or we all love chocolate. And the way we connect is through, you know, oh, your information is interesting, I'm going to start paying more attention. And out of networks, when these nodes start, you know, connecting more densely, relationship happens and community emerges. So networks for me are this really productive space, particularly online, because technology has changed what it means to be together. So these communities can emerge out of what starts out as an information relationship or an information connection into a personal relationship. Whereas offline, we tend to get to know each other first and then discover what we have in common and discover if we want to do something together. Whereas in a network, we may not know the 100 people we're connected to around a tag, but we sure follow those people because their tags are really useful for us.
Yeah.
So we come into it, there's like different doors we enter into these forms of human connection.
So what happens to us on that transition? What qualities change or morph or adapt when we make that transition from network to community as that cluster starts to emerge?
I think there is a rebalancing of the me and the we. So in an individual experience, it's about me. And in the network experience, my day-to-day experience in the network is I'm looking out for my interests, and if it contributes something to the greater good, great or not. You know, some of us tag because we like to contribute. Some of us tag because we like to keep track of things. Those are both legitimate me participation activities in a network. When it gets to the community, or, you know, if we want to use a less fuzzy term, group, it is saying, okay, I'm going to adjust my habits enough so that there's some benefit to the we and not just me. So this is really related to what Etienne Wenger and John Smith and I have been calling three different polarities that we looked at in terms of understanding the role of technology in communities of practice. And I think it applies to many kinds of community. But it's the space between the individual and the group, the space between togetherness and separateness, and the space between participation in publishing or participation in reification, the creation of artifacts, you know, the kind of concretization, I know that's not a real word, of what you're doing, what you're learning. And in communities, there's a negotiation about those polarities, whereas in the individual or the network, there doesn't have to be.
Yeah, and to me,
that's a distinguishing feature about a group or a community. Does that make sense?
It does. Let's take that person then. And they're all of a sudden they're realizing that they're having to adjust that me-we distinction whenever they get involved in that kind of community. What kinds of things do you personally start to do whenever that happens to you, when you realize that this network, in your larger network, you're seeing this community thing start to evolve? Because for me personally, one of the things that happens is I get nervous because I always worry about the investment and how much time I have to contribute. Because there is and one of the things that I'm looking at really exploring through this whole series of discussions is the responsibility that you have inside of a community that doesn't exist in a network. So what kinds of things do you do or that happen sort of mentally and emotionally to you whenever you make that transition?
Well, I kind of think the most enduring practice that has showed up for me from my, and particularly in online communities where often you can't see if somebody else found something that you contributed useful or needed something from you, is this idea of reciprocity and making reciprocity visible. By reciprocity, I mean not necessarily one-to-one reciprocity, me give something to you, you return the favor, but within the group. So early in the formation of a group, it may be acknowledging people's initial contributions, because when you put a contribution into cyberspace, you can't see the act of hearing or nodding or frowning. So contribution needs to be acknowledged early on until we get used to the fact and belief that others appreciate our contribution. And that's not to say you don't appreciate later on, but early on in a newly formed community, that making reciprocity visible is really important. Building relationships, finding out who is who. You know, if a tool that you're using for your online community has a profile, if you fill out that profile, when somebody clicks on it, they're going to know more about you, and it's going to make them perhaps feel more comfortable interacting with you, want to ask you something or offer you something, than if you hadn't. So this idea of understanding that you need to make some visibility of your participation and acknowledge the participation of others, which, you know, I kind of bundle under reciprocity. I think the other piece of it is not what the first thing you do, but is a way of being, which is in order to participate in a group, I have to have some degree of self-awareness that how others perceive me may not be the way I intended. I might not be aware of how others perceive me. And by being just ratcheting up my self-awareness when I go from me to we, that is a community participation quality.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean, you know, if I was an asshole before I was self-aware and I'm an asshole after I was self-aware that I've stopped being an asshole.
No, and to some degree there are communities where you're being an asshole is actually really effective. So,
right.
You know,
but it's
Fark.com, for instance.
Right. It's being aware of that.
Yeah.
And I think often, once again, both face-to-face and online, where we have difficulties in community is where we haven't even started with our own self-awareness, let alone trying to understand other people.
And that's something we talked about a bit before we actually started the audio. There really isn't a distinction in my mind between, or a clean distinction between face-to-face communities and online communities. Those are parts of those communities, but do you see that distinction the same way?
You know, I think the distinction between online and offline community is there are some things that are different, but fundamentally the way humans interact with each other, there's a lot we know about offline human interaction that we seem to just let it disappear the minute we go online, which amuses me and sometimes really frustrates me. So looking at what we know about group behavior, group facilitation, group practices in the offline world can really help us in the online world. Now, you know, like I said, technology has changed what it means to be together. So, and I'm waving my arms here while I'm doing this, so you can be with my body language. It causes us to have to adjust. So since you cannot see my body language, I have to tell it to you. Now, if we had a video, you could see it. But then you'd see that I'm still in my pajamas at 4 o'clock in the afternoon because it's been that kind of a day. And, you know, I wouldn't want you to see that, and that would have, you know, crossed over a boundary. So, you know, there's pros and cons to these limited types of expression.
We talked about the kinds of communities that are new and how that immediate response and sort of giving of yourself is really important. How about approaching an established community? What kinds of things do you do when you go and you go, oh, wow, this thing has been here for a long time? How do you go about getting in if you think that that's important?
Okay, so entry and engagement into any kind of community is a very interesting topic. And once again, first of all, self-awareness that you know, am I a newbie? Some people don't even know what it means to be a newbie. They hadn't thought about it. But if I enter into an experienced or an established community as a newbie, and let me say that I think newbies are really important and productive members. They bring in new ideas. They fertilize ideas. They build membership. So I'm a strong advocate for both newbies and lurkers, both of which are generally negative terms. I see them as very positive. But if you're aware you're coming into new, you know, you walk into a cocktail party, the first thing you don't do is, you know, blah, blah, blah. You listen to people. You introduce yourself to one or two people. You work the room. You pay attention to the dynamic. It's the same thing online.
Yeah, you don't walk into a room and start demanding
yourself.
Things.
Yeah. Right. You orient yourself. You know, what is the way of doing things here? Now, in some communities, the way of doing things is so codified that you could never figure it out. And that's often the types of communities that people have very difficult times entering. So if those communities want to welcome other people, then they have to either, you know, share the secret handshake or provide some sort of gradual scaffolding into the community, you know, a newbie corner. Someone is your mentor. I think in really established communities of practice where there's a deep level of experience, having people who are there to help new people come in is a beautiful act of community. Because it says we value you, but we also recognize there's quite a hurdle to get in.
Yeah, I think a lot of those communities define themselves by their exclusivity. I think that's one of the natural things. Being able to recognize that in a community and knowing that maybe you just don't have the effort necessary to try to break that code is an important skill on the way in, too.
Well, and I think, Dave, you also bring up that we shouldn't over-romanticize community as this positive, lovely, airy-fairy place. Communities can be all sorts of things, from welcoming, productive, learning, encouraging, to damaging, exclusionary, elitist, you know, whatever word you want to make up.
Mm-hmm.
And one community could be many of those things, depending on your point of view.
Definitely.
So our positive attributes as human beings and our negative attributes as human beings carry with us into our communities. And when we gang up in those communities, it could be really bad.
Well, you did say communities. And one of the things that you popped into the Skype chat that we're running in the background here is managing multi-membership. And this is something that I've written about, too, and I've certainly followed your writing on the subject. I think it's maybe the most critical skill that anybody needs the more they move into it. At first, you'll be okay. Once you start to get tugged into a variety of communities, managing that membership, knowing who you are in each one, not overselling your ability to contribute, and that whole management process is critical. Tell me what you think about that.
Well, I would say it's the second most important thing, and I'd still put self-awareness at the top.
Okay.
Because technology has given us new ways to be together, we can be potentially members of more communities than we simply can manage. So I think at some point you have to say, I can't belong to all these communities. And I think this is where networks can be a viable option, because you don't have that sort of obligation. But if I say I'm going to join a community And I never participate, and I never contribute, and I never listen, and I never respond. You know, I could be kind of that freeloader. Mm-hmm. Or worse yet, I don't even know what's going on, so I'm just kind of like, you know, an imaginary bit and bite on a membership list. Now, if there's no interdependent requirements in a community, that could be fine. But if there is some expectation that you would do some certain thing, you know, you should say, I can't. You leave. It's like you're not going to commit to a job if you can't finish it. So for me, I've had to cut back on the number of communities I belong to. I use networks to kind of keep an eyeball of what's going on across things, but I know that I don't have a responsibility of participation in the networks, where in the communities I do. Yeah. And I feel guilty. You know, I'm raised that way. I feel guilty if I don't contribute. And I think multi-membership is also something we can address from a technological perspective by being able to bring in our feeds from various communities and look at them in one place rather than having to log into multiple things. But in the end, how many really functional relationships can you have at one time, and how many communities can you belong to?
And how good is your work going to be? Yeah. So just to wrap up here, and I could talk to you about this for days, but I'm trying to keep these down to a certain time. Talk to me about a couple of successful and positive communities that you're involved in and how that works out.
Well, from a very traditional community, online community, I belonged to The Well for many years. And it was one of the early web-based communities. And I like it because the travel community, I can find and give and get and share information about my travels. And I travel a lot, so it has a very high functionality to me. And I notice that I will tend to come back and report on my trips if people say they appreciate hearing those reports. And if I get no response, I don't come back. So it's a community where I can count on, if nobody says anything, then probably my contribution wasn't really good, because people are good at giving you feedback. And if you ask a question, you always get an answer. So it's highly functional for me in that sense. I also belong to the Northwest Conference and the Virtual Communities Conference and the Food Conference and a bunch of other ones. The travel one's just one of the areas within The Well that's very valuable to me. Another community I think it's highly functional is the Knowledge Management for Development, or KM4 with the number 4, Dev, D-E-V, which is a global community of about 600 people interested in the application of knowledge in international development. You know, I think most of us would probably say piffle about knowledge management per se, but this is a community that's functional because we are building bridges across organizations, building collaboration and cooperation in ways that didn't exist before. We're very responsive to each other. We have an annual gathering that for many of us goes self-funded. That's how important it is to us. And it's a diverse community, so there's always this high opportunity for learning. So it's a really important community for me professionally. So I volunteer a lot of my time to help support it. And many other members do. And I think that's another thing about this community that I like, is people find enough value that they help sustain it. We have very little infrastructure, but a lot of caring. So there is a lot of reciprocity in terms of supporting what needs to be done to make the community function.
I noticed
so those
that
are
your
slow
communities end up being underfunded.
Yes, that was taking a line from Peter Block. In fact, his book on community I'd highly recommend. It's called, I'm reaching down on my floor, of Community, The Structure of Belonging. And Peter, I was at a meeting where Peter Block spoke, and he said, the most successful communities I've seen have been slow, small, and underfunded.
Yeah.
And, you know, when he said that, I'm going like, yeah, you know. As I look at that, that's really true. So it also asks the question is how big can a community scale? And I think some of the communities that I've seen fail have been ones that have tried to scale out to where they no longer had enough we there.
Yeah.
And if they had existed in this more network age, I think they would have been networks. But they tried to do something that the technology and our attention and our focus couldn't sustain. It couldn't scale out.
It's funny. We run into that with EdTech Talk sometimes, because there are talks about expanding, and the question always ends up, why would we bother? What happens once we get too big? And it works really well the way it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's
great. And I think there's a quality there, too, about small, which is they can offer an invitation, and you can have a likelihood that somebody hears it and will respond to, because in the end, community is about that interchange between invitation and response. It's like improv. It's, you know, call and response, make the other person look good and get what you want. And to me, some of those are my personal values around community. I'm not saying everyone else should ascribe to them, but for me, that gets to the core.